listening to the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, or maybe you're listening to us on podcast. My name's Alan Wares. My guest today is someone who started his career at Bristol City and via Fulham, Torquay, Reading, Ipswich, Hull, he now finds himself at Brighton. It's winger, slash fullback, slash utility man, slash anything you feel like him being. Welcome to the Albion Roar, Liam Rossini.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's an absolute pleasure to be here and hopefully have a nice, interesting conversation. And I'm sure, hopefully, you guys at home, you'll enjoy listening to it.
First of all, you're slightly broken at the moment. I'm sure you didn't really want to be reminded of that, but can you tell us how you are at the moment? What's the story with your injury?
No, I had some good news actually yesterday. I saw the surgeon who operated on my ankle, actually broke a part of my ankle and also slashed basically one of my ligaments in my ankle. It was quite a bad injury.
Slashed it
in a tackle. But I'm looking at maybe 3-4 weeks now, which is fantastic. I started running today, and all the hard work is paying off, and hopefully I'll be out to help the team and the club get somewhere special, which will be the Premier League.
Absolutely. I mean, we'll talk about sort of, you know, your days of being in the Premier League and what have you. So you're looking at sort of, where are we now? It's mid-November, so we're looking at mid-December. You're hoping to be back in the first team or in first team contention by Christmas. What did you do? How bad was the damage? I mean, was it one of those you think, this is it? Or did you think, come on, let's miracle doctor, work something with us?
Yeah, I'm always positive. So after I got injured, I was praying that it was just a sprain and something that would keep you out for a week or so. And then when I got the scan results back and the x-ray, it was bad news. When you go through that, and I had a bad injury last season as well, which was really difficult because we were in a good stage of the season where we were pushing again. It's really difficult mentally to come back and believe you're going to get back. But so far, so good. And the fact that the team are doing so well at the moment makes it easier for me on the touchline to watch it and enjoy how well the players are playing. And then hopefully later on in the season, if needed, I can help us get over the line.
I was about to say, but I mean, as much as you're thinking, oh, this team's playing brilliantly, we're enjoying it, you think, am I going to get back in? You know, everyone's playing so brilliantly. You almost, I don't mean, does the professional quietly hope, well, I hope so-and-so sort of slips up, or hope so-and-so gets a few bookings, or do you think, you know, you just love these guys so much that you want to, you know, just hope for the best anyway?
Every player wants to play. But when I see the team do so well, and people think that being part of a team is just that the 11 on a match day, there's so much deeper than that. It's about pushing in training, encouraging the players that are playing, encouraging the players that aren't playing. And I'm a senior player now, and that's my role, is to make sure that everything in the dressing room goes smoothly. The players are supporting each other. And then if I do get the chance, or if someone else gets the chance, we support them. And that's one of the reasons we do so well. You know, there's been a lot of talk about team spirit. Mm. I know, and that's something that really you can't artificially create that. It's something that has to be grown organically. It's something that's natural. And we have a really good blend of people at the club at the moment, not just in the team, but the staff, the coaching staff, the people who work behind the scenes, and it's all adding up to everyone pulling in the same direction. And if that means me not playing, then so be it.
Okay, well, we'll talk about sort of like the whole togetherness and your time, you know, and it seems like ages since you've been here, and it's still only about 17 months since you joined. But we'll talk about more about that sort of presently. But let's do the Eamon Andrews thing and go through your career quite quickly. Now, it says here, you made your debut for Bristol City as a 17-year-old substitute. Does that sound about right?
Oh, that sounds about right, and it was a very, very long time ago.
20th of April 2002. Yeah,
I didn't know it was that far.
To look that up.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. Because, again, my first touch of the ball was an assist, and I was playing up front in those days, mm-hmm. and times have changed, and I can't remember the last time I scored. But I remember it so vividly.
But do you remember who you came on for?
Oh, that is a tough question. I couldn't tell you who I came on for.
I've got it here, Joe Burnell.
Joe Burnell, yeah, I remember him.
Yeah,
I came through Bristol City's academy with him. Not seen him for years. He was a good player, and he had a good career in the lower leagues. But yeah, that's a name that that's a blast from the past for sure.
So you reckon your first touch you set up as an assist, yeah?
Yeah, my first touch was a free
ball. What do you remember of it? I mean, we were talking about 14 years ago, 14 and a half years ago.
You know, it's one of those days, your first ever league game, you'll always remember it. Mm-hmm. You'll always remember it. And it was my dream when I was a little boy to become a professional footballer. So it's something that I'll never forget. And I remember hyperventilating on the touchline because I was so nervous to come on. And the ball just seemed to come to me and I played a through ball to Christian Roberts, mm-hmm. who's a striker, played at Exeter, and he went round the goalkeeper and scored. That was my first touch. And yeah, it was quite an introduction to league football and one I'll never forget.
Fantastic. Also, there was a future Albion player in the Stoke side. Do you have any idea, remember who that might have been?
This is a tough question.
I suppose you'd have to know who your future Albion players were. But
yeah, that is a tough question from that long ago. Go on, give me the answer.
Chris Iwilumu.
Oh, yeah.
He was
yeah.
playing for Stoke in those days, and then we nabbed him the following year. And I think his two main contributions to the Albion were scoring a screamer. I think it was at Chesterfield, I think on his debut. I'm pretty certain it was him. And him waiting to be felled like a tree in the playoff final against Bristol City.
Bristol City, indeed. I knew you were going to say that. I actually remember watching that game because I'd left Bristol the year before.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the penalty. And it was two big clubs for that level with great support. And obviously, it's strange how things work out now.
So yeah, but it's. Did you sort of? I suppose you had a favoured side. You were gunning for Bristol City. That
yeah,
day.
I was back then because obviously I'd played for them. And Leroy Lita, who was actually here not long ago on loan, he was a young lad coming through, and we were very close. And he was actually on the bench for that game. So I actually remember that really, really vividly as well.
So when he plays well, I'd rather have a litre than a pint. It was that's all we
that's
ever
not
did.
Bad, that.
Not bad, not bad. And in your second season, you did what not many Albion players have done. You played in a final.
Yeah.
Go on then, take us through that.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing again.
We were talking about
It was called the LDV Vans Trophy
Vans,
back
yes.
then.
JPT / Checker Trade, whatever you want to call it now.
Yeah. And
you scored for Bristol City against Carlisle United.
Yeah, I remember that.
Slightly unconventional goal, wasn't it?
Off the chest. Off the chest from a yard out.
Yeah, it's not even that. Even then, you're forgetting another part of it. You'd sunk to your knees.
It's the only part of my body that I trust to get over the line. I didn't trust my right or left foot. Anyone seeing me shooting would agree with that statement. But yeah, again.
Do you remember the build-up to the goal? And
I remember it all.
Go on, then.
Playing in front of 80,000 people when you're 18 years old at the Millennium Stadium again.
You did have a lovely 18-year-old's haircut as well.
Yeah, I think I've still got it, the same one now.
Some of it's left.
Yeah, definitely. But no, it was, it was just the first goal, actually. I actually set up, I had a shot and the goalkeeper saved it. And I think Lee Peacock put it in the net. And then I was so happy about that. You just play free. And when you're in the zone and you're happy and enjoying yourself, that's when you play at your best. And it was literally a tap in from a yard out. And it was amazing because Bristol City are a big club and we see how well they're doing now. Mm. They've got big potential in that city. And I think that was the last trophy they won for a long, long time. So to be part of that was something special.
Sure. I mean, I think I've got to tell to our listener at home that Liam's been a little bit modest here. I mean, it was a great cross. If you can consider someone the cross that the likes of Gary Hart would have put in, that, you know, sort of a striker who knows how to sort of ping one in. And I think it evaded sort of the defenders. So it was along the 6-yard line. And Liam certainly improvised. He basically, instead of, you know, sticking his foot up or knocking his head down, he sunk to his knees and let it hit his chest. Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'll take that. That sounds a lot better than if you see it, if you actually watch the goal. It's like
a slide. You know, like the way that Knockout celebrates his goal now by sliding in? That's effectively what you did to score.
To score, yeah, definitely. But with a little less graceful than that, and he slide on his knees.
Yes, I mean, you do need a properly watered pitch from, but we'll come back to knock it shortly. So that earned you a move to Fulham. How did that all come about?
Well, when I was at Bristol City's academy, I'd been playing as a defender, actually, and been in with the England youth teams and highly rated there. And I actually went to West Ham on trial and it went really well and they wanted to sign me, but they couldn't agree terms. And there was always interest from Premier League clubs to take me. At the time, Bristol City were in League One, and it's every young player's dream to play in the Premier League. So when Fulham showed their interest and wanted to sign me, then...
Were they a Championship club at the time?
No, they were in the Premier League. It was just after Jean Tigenard left, who was a fantastic coach and someone who even influences English football now. It had a fantastic team with Louis Saha in it, Steve Malbronk, Lee Clark, Edwin van der Sar, managed to play with him. It was an absolutely incredible experience for me, and one I'll never forget as well.
So you got there. I mean, you got in, but I mean, you didn't exactly sort of get straight into the first team, did you? I mean, who was ahead of you, or rather, what were you signed as, and who was ahead of you in the pecking order?
It's funny, actually. Paul Nevin, who's now the first team coach at Brighton, was reserve team manager at Fulham when I signed there. So it's another friendly face that I see now. And there's a few rules around my transfer to Fulham. I wasn't actually allowed to play for the team for the first 6 months of being there.
Really? How can they?
There was a tribunal, and Bristol had tried to say that I had signed a contract when I didn't, and we had to go and take it to the court. And I don't think Bristol City fans remember me too well from that, but I can assure you that I was truthful about the event.
Set the record straight. Happened then?
Basically, they tried to backdate a letter without going into detail. You, as a young player, if you sign a contract before May, then it counts to next season. I actually hadn't done that. I still have plenty of really good things to say about Bristol, and if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be here now.
Sure. So you all the while this contract nonsense is being sorted out, you're not getting a game. Mm. So that means even going out on loan, which eventually did happen, nothing could happen. I mean, there's kind of an air of Dean Cox now, isn't there?
Yeah, I feel for him. A few of the lads who play with Dean have told me about his situation, and as a player, all you want to do is play. And it took me 6 months to get in and play in the reserves. Mm. And unfortunately for me, my dad.
So you couldn't even play in the reserves?
No, I couldn't play in the reserves.
So you didn't actually have a contract with Fulham? Or...
I was contracted to Fulham, but I wasn't actually allowed to play in any competitive games for quite
That's
a while.
Ridiculous, yeah.
So, it's one of the things that I look back on now, and it makes you a better person and makes you stronger, and I wouldn't change any of it.
Sure. So when all the contract stuff was sorted out, like I say, who what would you have been signed as? Because you said you played as a forward in early days, but obviously you're kind of a more of a defensive player now. What would you have been signed?
I was signed primarily as a right back.
Okay. Who was ahead of you in the pecking order then?
At Fulham at the time, it was a guy called Moritz Volz who came from Arsenal, and he was playing really well, and Fulham were doing really well in the Premier League. I think they finished that season seventh, and I was just a young player in the reserves. And it was tough to get in. I believed that I would get in the next season, but fate conspired to give me a chance, and I took it.
Well, I mean, I would say the following season, you went on loan to Torquay. I guess probably just so you could get some game time.
Yeah.
Who was the manager?
So Leroy Rossignol.
Yeah.
I don't know him too well. But that was amazing. Again, we got promoted.
What's it like working under your old man?
It was tough. It was tough, you know.
Do you think he was tougher on you than he was the others then?
Well, yeah, definitely. I was only 18, so I wasn't driving. So part of the arrangement of the loan deal was that I was living with him. And I'll never forget, he always tried to treat me the same as the other players. And
so it was actually probably quite tricky for him, isn't it?
Which was tough. And I didn't ever call him dad at the training ground. He was always gaffer or boss. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day on a Friday, he used to drive me into training, so I was driving into training with him, talking about the weather, talking about how family is and everything. Get to the training ground, and the assistant manager comes into the dressing room and says, Liam, the manager wants to see you. And I'm thinking, I've just seen him for an hour over breakfast and half an hour in the car on the way here. So he brings me in the office. He says, I'm going to rest you tomorrow. You seem tired. I'm not going to play. And I was like, Dad, you could have told me that over breakfast.
You said Dad?
Yeah, I did, which was should have been fine for that. But I think that sums up the way that he treated me there, because he tried to treat me just as any other player. And I think that the other players appreciate
it. What he's doing is separating, making a clear linear separation between the family, Leroy and Liam, the family, and Leroy and Liam, the manager and player.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's a kind of an interesting way of putting it.
But it was a great experience. We got promoted that year, and that was incredible. To be in some
what season are we talking about here?
That would have been 2003, 2004, or possibly 2004, 2005.
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. Yeah.
Yeah, and we had to win on the last day at Southend to get promoted, and to be promoted with your own dad. Something really special, and something again. I look back, and it's weird. I don't really look back on my career, but talking about things like scoring finals.
We were talking 10 years ago, yeah.
Yes, getting promoted with my dad. I'm very blessed to have had these experiences.
Do you still talk about your old man with that?
No, not particularly. We talk about family, you know. We talk about football and things like that. And he was my hero, you know, as a player. I used to go to Upton Park and watch him play. I remember being 5 minutes before kickoff, being in the gym with the likes of Liam Brady, Paul Ince, when I was 5 years old, having a kick around with them. It was a bit different back then. And I've been brought up in football. It's all I've ever known. I used to follow him to any game. Used to do scout reports for him when I was 10, 11. And watched him become a manager and sat in on all of his team talks and things like that. So, yeah, he's a massive guidance and a big part of my life. But when we're together, it's more about us being part of a family.
Sure. So what does he make of your career? I mean, can you speak for him and saying, you know, how does he view how your career is going?
You know what? We don't talk about my career. That's why I think I'm pretty blessed. A lot of young players and their parents speak to me and ask me advice on how to make it, and I say to the parents, you've just got to step back and let the players enjoy themselves. I remember my dad, he used to drop me off for a game and he'd say he was going home or he had to go and do the washing or something, and he wouldn't tell me that he was watching from 5-10 rows back because he didn't want to put any pressure on me. And I think in youth development now, there's too much pressure on players to perform when they need to just enjoy themselves and concentrate on their technique and practice. And I think that's why he was a major part of why I made it as a professional footballer.
Sure. So you got your promotion with Torquay and Fulham wanted you back. They thought, well, okay, one promotion's enough for you, sunshine. You get your backside back here. And you ended up playing under Chris Coleman.
Yeah.
Now, I'll talk about what Chris Coleman was like in those days. But let's leap forward to this year. Does it surprise you how Chris Coleman's Welsh side did in the Euros this year?
Not at all. I can say nothing of the highest respect I have for Chris Coleman, mainly as a person, before his coaching ability. And I think in football, the most important part of your attributes or your skill set is your humility and how you are as a person. And I sent him a text, actually, while he was away in the Euros. I remember going into his office at Fulham, at the Motspur Park training ground. And as you walked into his office, he'd have a huge Wales flag on his back wall, you know, and you knew how proud he was to represent his country. And I texted him saying, I remember that. And to see him do so well with that team and get them to semi-finals of a major competition gave me goosebumps. And he's a man who's been through a lot. He had his career cut short with a horrendous injury. And at the age of 32, 33, became a manager, and he's had an outstanding career as a manager, and I think he'll go on to do even more great things.
Sure. I mean, with Wales, or do you think he's actually going to get a better paid gig in England or even maybe overseas? Can you see him doing that?
Yeah, I think his stock is really high now, and I think he could definitely manage in the Premier League, and I think it's a matter of time before he does that again. I think he's in a position where he can actually pick and choose what the right job and the right time is for him, but he's so proud of managing his country at the same time. I think it will take a lot for him to give that up.
So back in those days at Fulham, when you were called back from Torquay, I mean, you were still only sort of 21, 22 at the time. What do you felt you learnt from him?
From the manager?
From Chris Coleman.
Well, it's funny.
Was it from other people as well around?
Yeah, well, I was mainly in the reserves. I wasn't seen as a first team player. And this sums up Chris Coleman for me. So I came back from Torquay at the end of that season, and in pre-season for the next season, there was a squad list that went up for the first team, and there must have been 30, 31 players in it. And I looked at the board, I wasn't on it, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm 20, 21 years old, I thought this was going to be my year. Mm. And I was so emotional about it, I nearly burst into tears. And Lee Clark was the captain who's had gone on, he was a fantastic player, and has had a really good managerial career as well. He dragged me aside, said, what's wrong? And I said, I'm not in the squad list for the first team. And he said, right, come with me. So he took me upstairs, took me into the manager's office, said, right, go on, speak to him. So I said to Chris Coleman, and I'd hardly ever spoken to him. I was in awe of the man. And I said to him, why am I not in the first team squad? I thought this year I was going to get a chance. And he said, right, this is what we'll do. And this summed up how he is as a person. He said, I respect the fact that you've come in as a 19-year-old and challenged me and my decision. He said, you can come with me on the pre-season trip and you can play the first game for Fulham, first team, first 45 minutes. And if you do well, then you've got a chance. And if you don't, then you've got a year left. We might as well rip your contract up. And I was like, wow, I've really put myself under pressure here. And luckily I played in that game and did well. And he promised me after that, he said, if there's ever an injury to a right back, then you'll be in. It doesn't matter who you play against, you'll be in because I believe in you. And the first game was Manchester United.
So I was about to say, that kind of sense of approval, actually, you know, it can only ever spur you on, because you think, well, okay, I've kind of got a heads or tails moment here in my career. You know, he said, you know, it's this hell of a pressure. You've been given 45 minutes to prove yourself. In a match which, you know, in any other terms, probably wouldn't say doesn't matter, but isn't going to be sort of like the be all and end all. And this is a kind of defining moment for your career, because you have a bad 45 minutes. You're going to be playing at Lewis for the rest of your time.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that was the test. And I think that's why he said that, because he wanted to see if I could perform under pressure. And fortunately for me, I did. But I think that's the measure of him as a person and him as a manager, is to give a young player that chance. Not only give a young player that chance, but actually stand by what he said, because he literally said to me, if there's ever an injury, it doesn't matter who we play against, you'll play.
And there's your bonus. There's your incentive, isn't it?
Exactly.
But again, I still think you're being modest by the fact that, oh, he gave me a chance. The point is, you still took it.
Definitely. But I think in football, a lot has to do with luck, and a lot has to do with opportunity. And I was so lucky to be given that opportunity. And I remember the first game I ever played for Fulham was live on Sky, home to Manchester United, which was pretty incredible for me, because I was a Man United fan when I was young.
What?
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to spring that on you, but I was a massive Man United fan.
Yeah, we do talk to each other before we come on air, and we do mention this, that and the other. And I, to be honest, I did forget to actually ask Liam, which was his boyhood team. And you know, listen, everyone that's listening, please don't hold that against him. He's still a lovely chap. But sorry, how did you do in that game then?
Well, we drew 1-1, and I somehow got man of the match while I was marking Ronaldo, which was pretty special.
Oh, that's an easy one. It does actually remind me of a former manager that we had on the show once upon a time, Chris Catlin, when he got transferred to Coventry City. We're talking about 1970 here, 69, something like that. And his first job, it just come from second division Huddersfield. His first job was to mark George Best.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, exactly. So your career's not going to be that badly sort of defined if you're actually going to mark one of the best players in the world. In your debut. So.
Definitely. That was obviously another incredible experience as well.
Sure. So when you transferred to Fulham, they were, like you say, they were still a Premier League side.
Yeah.
Now, as another stat, it's the first one I'm going to lumber on you here, at present, you are the second most prolific Premier League player at the Albion.
Yeah.
But you know who the first one is.
Yeah, Steve Sidwell. Yeah. He's been there, done it, got the T-shirt.
Well, Steve Sidwell's made 185 appearances in the top division. Do you know how many you have made? You're not a statter. Actually, so many players we know are statters. They know exactly everything there is about their career. You haven't bothered with that, have you?
I don't look back too often. I don't like to talk about past achievements or accomplishments or things like that.
Really?
No.
Okay. No. Okay, it's 138 appearances in the top
division.
Oh,
that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, you did.
And Hopefully more to come,
yeah. Absolutely. The third most prolific, and it's not actually in the Premier League, but if we're talking top division, is Skipper Bruno, 128 in La Liga. So,
yeah, that's not bad either.
not bad at all. Did you have a nice time at Fulham? Do you enjoy it?
I loved it. I loved every minute.
Do you think you're still well considered there?
I'd hope so. But it was so long ago, and football changes so much that, you know, you're forgotten quickly in football. But while I was there, I had the best time, you know, being 20, 21, playing every week in the Premier League. And I think one season I managed to play 38 out of 38.
Yes,
I did every minute.
2006, 2007, 38 match ever present.
Yeah, so
that's a rarity, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's pretty special. And I think what was sad about what happened at Fulham for me is that Chris Coleman left. And it left us, I didn't think he deserved to go. And I rushed the decision to leave the club when I think it was probably better for me to stay there.
Why? Well, I mean, say you're not looking back, but sorry, we've got to look back here. Yeah. Why do you think you rushed it? There's an air of regret about it. What did you rush?
Well, the thing with me is I've got a background in football all of my life, and I've got really strong beliefs on how the game should be played and how you should coach. And Chris wanted Fulham to play in a way, an attractive style of football, an attacking style of football. And that suited me as a young player to improve and grow. And then unfortunately for me, we got a manager in Laurie Sanchez who likes to play a different style of football. And it's not wrong to play his way, but he came from an era of the Crazy Gang and Wimbledon and long ball. And to be honest, that's not my style of football. And I said to them, if that's the way you want to go, then I'm better served going elsewhere and trying to improve, because my passion isn't money, my passion isn't playing every week, my passion is football and enjoying what I do. And my dad always said it's a short career. And in order for me to enjoy my career. I felt I needed to leave with Laurie as manager.
So you went to Reading.
Yeah.
But in that time, you also had a spell at Ipswich as well.
Yeah.
What happened there then?
So with Reading, I joined a club that had finished 7th, 8th in the Premier League and who had done fantastically well. And I felt I was going to a club that was on the up, and Steve Coppell, who obviously Brighton fans know very well, is a fantastically well-regarded manager and someone I still have a lot of respect for. But what I found when I got there is a lot of things have changed, and players who had done well the previous season were now thinking of contracts and monetary things and not concentrating on the football side. And unfortunately for us,
they've seen the cash cow and fancy milking it.
And that's why it's really important if we go up that we stay focused as players, because if you take your eye off the ball, you can end up shooting down the leagues quicker than you think. And there was an air of that at Reading. And unfortunately for us and for me, we got relegated that season. And Fulham actually stayed up on goal difference and we went down. Because Roy Hodgson took over from Laurie Sanchez after, I think, 3 or 4 months there. So that's the way football goes sometimes.
Yeah, I was about to say, there's an area, you look back and you think, if I'd have been a bit more patient, because if you see that a particular style is not good and players have gone from a nice, attractive game to a lump in it game, then you think, well, this isn't going to last anyway because it doesn't work. The fact that Roy Hodgson, who's now become a little bit of a, you know, sort of a slightly comedic figure, especially since he went to work for the FA. I mean, his work at Fulham was astonishing, wasn't it?
No, he's an outstanding coach. No matter what we think of last year's Euros, he had a great career to even get the England job. We should be the pinnacle for any Englishman, and he deserved that honour because he's had an outstanding career, and at that time what he did with Fulham was nothing short of a miracle. And I was delighted for Fulham because it's a good club, but it wasn't so great for me.
Sure. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com. Maybe you listen to us on the podcast or Glorious DAB. As ever, this show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and we do thank Phil Shelley for his continued support. Thanks for your help, mate. Now, I do have a shirt of the week, and I'm just about to show it to Liam. I'm going to ask him if he recognises that. He's giggling.
It's an extra, extra large away Bristol City shirt.
How can you tell this size from there? It's Phil's,
huge.
I guess.
Yeah. How is that way?
No, I'm going to say that. Well, okay, it's nice that actually one of our guests can recognise it straight away, because we normally and sort of, you know, just don't get it. But anyway, so Phil says, well, I do hope your guest recognises this one. He did straight away, Phil. It is, of course, a Bristol City away shirt from the season 2002-2003, when Liam made 23 appearances for the Robins. The Robins have worn red home shirts ever since they were formed in 1894, when they were known as Bristol South End. The name Bristol City was adopted in 1897. City have the distinction of having won the Welsh Cup in 1934. They also won the Anglo-Scottish Cup in 1978 and have lifted the Football League trophy on 3 occasions. So that's pretty good going, winning English, Scottish and Welsh Cups. Norman Hunter was the player of the year 2 seasons running between 76 and 78, and former Seagull AD Akinbaye had the same honour in 98-99. The club's official anthem is One for the Bristol City by the Wurzels. Do you know the words?
I know that very well.
Are you going to sing it for us?
I can even do a good Bristolian accent with it, but you might scare a few people off.
Go on then.
I'll give you the first line.
Go on then.
One for the Bristol City. That's it. That's all I'm giving you.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll record a karaoke version of that later and put it up on the podcast.
Please don't.
Okay. Is that your Christmas turn though? Is that what you
no,
have?
No.
You didn't get a rites of passage at the Albion when they, you know, right.
Do you know what? I did. We all have to go through that.
We'll talk about that in a second. Released in 1976. Thank goodness for William Ward Higgs, or I'd hate to think what the Seagulls would be running out to. William Ward Higgs wrote Sussex by the Sea, by the way.
I love that. It's a good one to come out to. Enjoy that one.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. We'll talk about the Albion in a minute, but quickly, we're just going to run through the next part of your career, which was 5 years at Hull City.
Yeah.
I bet you had a blast there, didn't you?
I did, actually. I have nothing but good to speak about Hull, because I was actually out of contract for, I think, 6 or 7 months. And I literally played a trial game at Hull and then played 3 days later in the first team and didn't look back. So that was an amazing experience for me. And again, I'd grown as a person. I'd gone from playing.
What age were you by this time?
I was 25.
Uh-huh.
And what I did is I ran my contract down at Reading and wanted to get back into the Premier League, but there were no takers. There was interest, but there were no takers. And by the time Championship clubs had come in for me, I'd turned down all of their offers. So I actually went through to pretty much December without a club. And I was training on my own in a on a Wimbledon Common where my house was, and that changed.
Well, at least you know it's clear of rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. I was clearing it up. That was part of my job. I was jobless.
Liam the Womble.
Yeah, and I was, okay. You know, but that changes you as a person. If you go through taking football for granted and being part of a team to for 6 months being out of a job, my wife was pregnant with our third child, and yeah, it was pretty a scary time. So I said to myself I would always enjoy and give everything no matter where I end up, and luckily I ended up at Hull.
Sure. Who did many things, including getting to the FA Cup final.
Yeah, that was amazing.
Go on.
Amazing.
Because every Albion fan can actually obviously remember their time from 83, or those that were there obviously remember their time, remember every single kick, everything. But, you know, you played in it, so.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Far away, tell us about it. What were we missing out on?
The fact we were 2-0 up and managed to lose it in extra time, but obviously Arsenal are a fantastic, fantastic team. But it's just the whole experience, you know, it's surreal. You're there and you're playing, but you can't. I remember watching FA Cup finals as a little boy. I remember my dad getting knocked out of the semi-final with West Ham, and I was devastated I didn't get to go to Wembley. So for me to then, in my career, end up playing in one was something absolutely incredible. You know, the build-up, the journey to Wembley Stadium and the helicopter above taking footage of you. It's all pretty surreal that you're a part of it. And the fact that I had 40 family members there, I think I paid out more money than I got in bonuses for the whole year for them to go.
Butterflies? No, not really.
I wasn't nervous. It was just something that I said to myself, I'm going to enjoy. And like I said before, from going from without playing, without having a club maybe 3 years before that, to playing an FA Cup final, that was just an accomplishment. That was amazing for me, and we were so unlucky not to win it.
Sure. When your time was up at Hull, and it was 5 years, and I'm just flying through it here, but you know, is when your time was up at Hull. Now, a couple of years ago, we had a Hull City fan on, because obviously they've got their issues with the owners, you know, for changing the name from Hull City to Hull Tigers, which incidentally is a really bloody stupid idea, irrespective of what any players think. They have to, obviously, they have to sort of retain an air of neutrality about this, especially if it's their employer. But obviously the fans were very much against it. But what I remember him talking about was that when you left Hull City, or rather your contract wasn't renewed and therefore you were looking for a new gig, and you came here, Hull City fans were sorely, sorely disappointed, to the point that I think some of them said, you know, this is outrageous, you know, we shouldn't be letting him go, blah, blah, blah. And one actually did say to us, please look after him down here. Now, what have you done to Hull City fans to actually make them say things like that?
Well, you know, they sing a song. My nan's lived in Hull for 30 years, and I think it helped me have a good relationship with them. They used to sing that my nan was from Hull, and I... Like, again, the biggest lesson...
Are you going to sing that in a word?
No, I'm not going. Okay. I don't have a northern accent to do it.
Okay. But, well, your Bristol one's a bit ropey.
Yeah, it's not... I don't mind that. I've got rid of that now. but no, I mean, when you go through not having a club, and I'll keep going back to this because it's something that shaped who I am now, you realise how blessed you are to be a professional footballer. And I said I would give it everything. No matter where I ended up, I would give everything and I would appreciate what I've got.
But what did you do at Hull, though? I mean, there's something. I mean, any Brighton fan listens to this knows that, and possibly you saw this, the love that there is for Inigo Calderon. Even, you know, he's kind of one of ours. He goes, it's something that goes beyond the pale, goes beyond the, you know, the mere fact that this is a person who's actually prepared to go through walls for a given club on the pitch. Mm. This is what comes across from the Hull City fans for you. Mm. And I have no desire to embarrass you, and if I am, I don't care.
Yeah.
This sounds like what's happened at Hull City to you. So I'll ask you again, what did you do?
What did I do? I think I was just myself. I honestly, I couldn't tell you. I try and be as authentic as possible. I try and appreciate people. That's how I was brought up. And it doesn't matter whether you're the owner of a football club or you're the cleaner of a football club. To me, you're just as important. And I try and take that into every club. I try to be enthusiastic. Because how lucky am I to be a professional footballer? How many people get the opportunity to do this
We all want that gig, mate.
As a job, you know. And so I'll never, ever take it for granted. And I think that just comes across. And even when I came here, we won. Every time we win, I try and appreciate the fans. If we lose, I try and appreciate the fans. Because without the supporters, football is nothing. Mm. Football is not the game that we love. We don't have the atmosphere. We don't have the enthusiasm, the passion. That all comes from the fans, and they should be appreciated more. And I think Caldy, he did the same. You know, he cares about people. He's a lovely guy. I had the pleasure of playing with him for a year, and there was no one as disappointed as he was at us not getting promotion last year. and people like that who care, I think it comes across, and hopefully I can. I'm not looking to emulate Caldi in any way, but if people see that in
it's
me
a hell
here,
of a target to go for, maybe.
No, not in that way at all. I wouldn't ever try that. The man is a legend, and but if people can see that I have that side to me and I care about what the fans think, then that's great for me.
Sure. I mean, when I say you were released by Hull on 23rd of June, so it's not as though you were too long out of the game. And still, I'd say only 17 months ago, you came down here. How did that move come about?
The manager and Ian Pearce, he's one of the chief recruitment officers at the club. I used to play with him at Fulham, funny enough, and he's a great guy. And he messaged me and said Brighton were interested in bringing me down here. I had one or two other clubs who were interested. Obviously, I was a free agent. But one of the things that struck me about Brighton, even before, this was 2-3 years ago, playing against you guys in the Championship, mm-hmm. the stadium's incredible. And what I go back to style of football, but I really enjoyed watching Brighton play. And you have a real identity to the way that you play. And you have an academy that backs that up. And I think this club is going to be strong over the next decade. And when I say strong, I mean at the top, in the top flight, pushing the top half of the Premier League. And hopefully
that's a bit ambitious, isn't it?
No, I believe that. I think in terms of infrastructure and in terms of philosophy and identity, and there's a real strong identity from
what do you mean by identity? You said the word three times. What do you mean by that?
Every football club has an identity, and if the club doesn't appreciate their own identity, who they are, I think every football club has a personality. And Brighton's sense of personality is very strong.
Okay, as someone who came in from the outside, I mean, obviously you're part of it now, but as someone you're talking about from 2 or 3 years ago, what did it say to you as a whole player? What did that identity, say to you?
You walk into the club and the stadium is absolutely fantastic, even when you're on the coach and you drive down the hill and you're driving down into the stadium.
Hull had a new stadium. We've still got a relatively new stadium. I mean, surely you...
Yeah, but that's why, I mean, there's a culture behind it. There's a thought behind everything here. And even the way of playing and identity, everything suits the area. There's a real way of thinking, a way of living here. And that's why I say living down here, it's not... I immerse myself in living in Brighton because it's a liberal, it's an open place where people are respected no matter where they come from, no matter whether they're gay, straight, black, white. And I resonate with that. And I think that this football club, in terms of the Albion and the community scheme, in terms of the girls' football clubs, in terms of the women's football, in terms of the men's football, in terms of the academy.
Disabled football.
Yeah. Like it's something that the passion for each one of those categories of football is so strong. Because everybody's
you can feel
the same.
Even as a player, even as a first team player, in the rarefied atmosphere
culture,
of...
And I think that when I walked into the training ground, I walked in with my wife, and I turned around to her and I said,
"Well, they're going
to
sign her."
Yeah, well, she makes all the decisions, so they had to recruit her before they recruit me.
Fair enough.
But no, I'm really, really passionate about identities of football clubs, and when I finish playing, I want to coach and I want to manage, and I think you have to have a sense of who you are as a person and who you are as an organisation. I think that in terms of the owner, the manager, we've got that 100% right, and you're seeing the results on the pitch from that.
Have you brought your dad down and said, "Dad, come on, have a look at this"? Have you
seen it?
Yeah.
My dad was interviewed for the job, for the Brighton job. I think Mark McGee got the job, and I remember my dad was so excited about even at Withdean, because they showed him the plans mm-hmm. of Farmer Stadium. And I remember I was young, and my dad came away and said, "Oh, if I get this job, this club will be massive, absolutely massive. I've seen the plans for the stadium," and he was so excited about it. And again, it's mad how in life things can come round. 10 years later, I'm now here and I'm seeing the benefits of everything that he said back
then. I was
then.
About to say, see, I mean, we've had our sort of, you know, 12, 14, 15 years of struggles and battles and ongoing stuff. I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, when you got here, did you get the sort of copy of Build a Bonfire, or we want Falmer stuck under your nose?
There is a recruitment video, and that is a massive part of the recruitment video.
Oh,
for
really?
Players. Yeah, there's a recruitment
sat
video.
Down, so you get... Here's the history, sunshine, watch and learn.
Exactly, and I think you're seeing that now with the players. You look at the players that have come in. There's a real passion for the shirt. If we lose a game, and I think since I've been here, I think we've lost 5 in 50 games.
Well,
there's a real determination.
Since the beginning of last season, it's 7 in 63.
7 in 63. There's a real determination to win games and not to lose. And that comes again. We have good players.
What's on the video then? I mean, we haven't seen it. What's on it?
It's just the history of the club and how the club's progressed and evolved to where it is now.
And it includes the war years, we call the war years.
The war years, the fans, the demonstrations.
Do you have any recollection of that from the outside? Do you have any recollection?
I have a vague recollection, but when you're young and you're into your own thing, it's hard. But I have a broad interest in football. Obviously, my dad's background, my own background, I understood what was happening. So to see where the club is now from where it was in those awful times, I remember going down to the Withdean to play in a pre-season game for Fulham, thinking, Brighton were a huge, huge club. Mm. You know, my dad played at Goldstone, a packed, packed stadium. Mm-hmm. And then looking at the Withdean and thinking,
how did it come to this?
Here?
Yeah.
But now to see it go full cycle to what it is now, and it's such a feel-good factor around the place, and the fans are fantastic, and everyone, you know, our motto was together after the Shore and Mare disaster.
Well, I was going to talk about that in a second.
But again, there's a real sense of community here, and that's what I think the players feed off, because we all live in the area, we all see it, we see Brighton shirts in the city. I think it makes a huge difference to your performances on the pitch.
Sure. So on the pitch, how do you see yourself? I mean, you said you started your career as a forward, and you went to Fulham as a fullback, and you seem to be a bit more of a utility player here. I mean, as what's the gaffer said to you as to what he feels that he wants you here to be?
I think I was brought to the club, on the pitch, to bring my qualities in terms of my experience, and you know, I don't think I'm an exciting player. I think I'm a pretty consistent 7 out of 10, maybe even pushing 8 out of 10 player, which I'm proud of. You know, I'm not going to go
modest
and beat...
again.
I'm realistic. I'm never going to be Anthony Knockhart or Jamie Murphy and beat 3 people and put it in the top corner. But
the dream's there, surely.
Yeah, oh, I'd love one day. But I know my strengths and my understanding of the game, and I think my strengths are making sure that making other players better in my play and off the pitch, and helping them to become better players.
So you're, I mean, obviously you said, I mean, we have to sort of word it carefully so you don't care. What you're saying is that you don't mind seeing as you become, I assume you're saying you've effectively become a fan of the club because of all the things, and not just the fact that you're a current playing, you know, member of the squad, that all the things that have come together in this. Is it fair to say you're a fan of the club? So you're happy to watch the team from the sidelines, much as you'd rather be out there playing.
Of course I'd rather be playing, but it's not just me, it's every player.
Are you
in
struggling
that squad
to see where you'd fit in then? Because you've got, you know, I think that most people see that you're a cover for either Bruno or for Bong, who with all due respect to yourself, are playing brilliantly at the moment.
And that's what I want. I want them to do well. I want them to perform. And I think since I came to the club, and I voted for Bruno as player of the year when I was at Hull in a championship, as right-back player of the year, I think he's fantastic. And I think the fact that I came in at the start of last season, I think upped his levels considerably. And he's by far at the moment the best right-back in the league. But I'd like to think that every day in training I pushed him to become better. And that's what I'm talking about. It's a squad game.
Sure.
And now you've got, say, if Anthony comes back in on Friday to play, you've got Jamie Murphy, who was outstanding, scored at Bristol. Yuri Scalitz gets an assist a game.
Can you play up front? Because everyone keeps saying that we need another striker.
But I'm not sure those days are. I'll leave that to the experts.
Really?
Yeah, I'll leave that to the experts. But no, I'm here.
Listen, Cowdy wants to play up front all the time, and he said when he was on the show 3 years ago, I'm like a big kid. I only want to score goals. Isn't that what you want?
I don't know. I want to help the team win. That's the most important thing for
me. Even if it means going in goal and saving
them. I'll go in goal. I'll sit on the bench. I just want the team to win, and that's what's the most important thing for me.
Sure. So when it comes to, you know, the team ethic, I mean, you touched on it very, very briefly there. Mm. I mean, in the season that we had Sami Hupia, and it wasn't the greatest start, and Chris Hughton kind of just dragged us over the line, and then we had this this club slogan, one club, one ambition, which I'd like to thought there was actually more than one ambition. Which was done away with, and there was a hashtag together. And at the time, a lot of people thought, oh, you know, another cheesy marketing thing. And like you say, then Shoreham happens. Now, you know, without sort of wishing to sort of dwell on the horror and the sadness that there was there, there was that game against, and it was against Hull, you know, I mean, obviously there was the game against Blackburn, which was the day of the crash, but then there was the game afterwards.
I remember Ipswich away as well.
And Ipswich away, of course, you know, there seemed to be a sort of a red letter day about that one. Did anything kind of change for you? Did it mark anything for you?
I think I remember warming up for the Blackburn game. And we were told while we were warming up for the game that something had happened. We weren't sure what it was, but there was a big disaster, you know, on the...
I think we'd heard the same, same thing.
So we weren't sure. So I actually went, I sneaked into the toilets, and this is 10 minutes before the game, to call my family.
And you were due to play that day?
Due to play, right. And I called my wife just to make sure that she was okay. So we weren't aware of the gravity of what had happened until afterwards. And what hit us, working for Brighton Football Club, was driving in every day on that road. Every day we had to drive in, and the police response unit were actually working from the training ground.
Mm.
And to see that every day was, it hits you in a way that you can't explain how devastating that was to the area, to the community, to lose people in the prime of their life, people who had support for the club, people who worked at the club, Matt Grimstone and Jacob. It was a sad time. And we said as players, if we can make people just a little bit more happier and winning football matches, then that's what we've got to do.
Well, this is it. I mean, there was obviously Matt was a goalkeeper, and David Stockdale was, you know, he was effectively thinking, well, I'd imagine, you know, well, you guys know what happened in the dressing room. He's thinking, well, I've got to do something here. There's a kind of, you know, this whole sort of goalkeepers union. But, yeah. You know, he was the one that actually put himself forward to say, look, I can be a representative of the club here to the Grimstone family.
I think it's just David, who he is as a person. I think that's the type of people we have in the dressing room. And again, I don't think it's by accident. If you look at the work that's been put into the football club in terms of recruitment, in terms of identity, another word I go back to, there's a massive emphasis on character that you bring into the football club, the type of player that you want, the type of person that you want.
There's no Billy Big Times in there, is there?
No, and I think if there is, I think they would find out pretty quickly that it's not acceptable.
Mm.
And that's the beauty of what we have at the moment, and I think that's carrying us a very long way. But again, that's not by accident, that's by design, it's through recruitment, it's through doing your homework. And that's all down to all credit to the owner, to Paul Winstanley, the head of recruitment, and to the manager, because they've done an outstanding job so far.
I was about to say, I mean, I asked earlier about how, you know, what what you got from Chris Coleman in your time at Fulham.
Mm.
What do you feel you're getting from Chris Hughton here at Brighton? And if it's not just Chris, then others around you. What you, you know, with all due respect, you're in the second half of your career now.
Yeah.
You're on side two, track three. But, you know, do you still feel that you're learning, and what are you getting from the people around you?
I think in terms of the manager now, I think meeting him and playing under him at this stage of my career is possibly the best thing that could have happened to me in terms of learning. I want to manage and I want to coach. I've made no secret of that, and I want to do it from a young age. And learning how he organises, how he's meticulous, how considered he is, and calm he is in his approach, and humble he is as a person. But he's still a winner, and he lets players be accountable. He lets players be themselves, and he kind of steps back when he needs to step back and allow players to show their character. And he's by far the best manager I've worked under, and I have nothing but respect for him. And hopefully, I can work with him and play for him for a long time yet.
The way he comes across in his interview is, I mean, you can't imagine him shouting. I mean, have you ever heard him bawl at you?
He can do. Can do when he needs to, and that's another strength. You need different sides of
your personality. Picks and chooses the moments to do it.
You know, I think the best way to gain respect from not just players, but people in general, is the feeling that they don't want to let you down. You know, if you constantly fear someone, you can never be expressive. And in football, you need to be expressive. You need to be confident. And if you're always fearful of making a mistake, that someone's going to shout you down for it, you're never going to fulfill your potential.
So if you know that you guys, either individually or collectively, have had a bad game, you've got that philosophy within the changing room that says you don't need to be screamed at that you've had a bad game. You know you've had a bad game.
We'll do it for ourselves. We've got a group now that demand from each other, not just in games, but every day in training. Demand effort. Demand 100%.
There are no slackers.
There are no slackers. And if you are slacking, then you'll get left behind. And that is down to the manager and down to the culture and organisation of the football club. Because without that, it's easy for players to maybe take a step back, maybe not put their effort in. But now you see people who are so talented. Anthony Knockhart's probably one of the most talented players I've ever played with. But if you look at his running stats, he's top of the running stats. He works harder than anyone else.
Mm.
And that goes to show what kind of team ethic we have at the club. And that's one thing that I think is so important if we want to be successful.
Talking of team ethic, there was a question I meant to ask you a few minutes ago, because you did touch on it again. It was when you did actually sign, you had a rites of passage. What was your forfeit? What did you have to do?
So you always have to stand on a chair and sing at, at a mealtime. And yeah, you can't not do it. It's just one of those
things.
What
happens if you don't? Do you get debagged, or do you get your hair set on fire?
No, but again, it's one of those things. It's just expected that you do.
Oh, okay.
If you want to be part of the team, then you have to embarrass yourself and sing really badly in front of people. And my song was Bill Withers' Lean On Me.
Oh, that could be
so it's a classic. I love Bill Withers. I love that
my man
era of music.
I mean, for all those people that love Liam Rossini, and Lee and his dad for actually producing such a fine lad, and wanted to, you know, they loved him for his football and his attitude. He's also got excellent taste in music. Yeah. How's that?
He was the best.
How did you do it?
Got up, got a spoon and a banana.
What?
Yeah, singing to a banana. I'm holding a microphone now, but I didn't have one at the time. And just lay it out and then get down quick as possible and sit back down and let someone else have a go.
So how many verses did you do then?
I did pretty much all of it, and it was all terrible, absolutely terrible. But what you're hoping for is that everyone else joins in and then you're saved.
And did they?
They did in the end, yeah.
Really?
So it worked out all right in the end.
Fair enough. So obviously you're not the most recent person to join, so now I've got to ask, who else has done what song since they joined?
Every player. Every single player that's
who's
joined.
Done what?
I mean, Glenn Murray did Frozen, Let It Go in Tenerife, and that was quite funny. He said it was the only song he knew off by heart because of his kids. That was quite funny. So every single person has to do it, even the coaches. And
right. Do you get the choice?
No, we choose what we sing.
Right, you get the choice. You don't get it lumbered on you?
No, and the lads
You don't
from
get
abroad,
the Laughing Gnome or something like that?
No, the lads from abroad, they normally sing their national anthem, which is quite tough because we can't sing along to that. So we kind of boo and start throwing food at them as well. So.
Yeah, bananas and spoons.
Exactly.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Well, additionally to your time on the pitch, you've joined your old man in the ranks of the cognoscenti. In other words... you've got a microphone now.
Yeah.
You've had a go at co-commentating. At least he had the good grace to retire first.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, I appreciate that you're still being, you're on the mend, but you had a go at co-commentating for Seagulls player.
Yeah.
How did that come about and how did you find it?
It's just the club asked me to get involved and do it. And I'm the type of person, I always try something once. You know, I my passion is football. I always want to be involved in football one way or another. My first choice after I retire is to manage, but there's always other options and ways of doing it. And that was a really, really great experience. And it was great also that we won, because I don't think I'd have been as much fun had we lost the game against Barnsley.
It was Barnsley, wasn't it? And yeah. And I think I did pick up on it, because I think you commentated or co-commentated on a really great goal, because it involved a knockout breakaway.
Yeah, fantastic goal.
I mean, how do you keep up with that? I mean, it's just a blur that runs up the pitch, isn't it?
He's incredible. But you should see what he does to me in training.
What does he do to you in training?
He makes me look very silly. So I'm delighted that come Saturday he's on my team and
he
not against
me. He can't
be
the only one who makes look silly.
No, he does it to everyone. The guy's a genius. I remember playing against him when he was at Leicester. Mm-hmm. And I remember the Paul Winstanley saying to me in the training ground that we were going to sign him from Standard Liège. And I actually couldn't believe that that we were getting him, because he's a Premier League player.
Mm.
And but again, like I said before, these things, signing people like Anthony Knockhart, having the culture that we do at the club, they don't come by accident. Everything is designed. And people like Paul Winstanley, the recruitment, then the amount of effort they put into it, they managed to unearth gems like Anthony and Yuri Skalak, who both of them have been absolutely fantastic for us.
He's like a Duracell. I think someone defined him as a Duracell bunny. He just keeps going and going and going.
Yeah, he loves playing football. He loves playing the game, and it shows in what he does on the pitch. And for him, especially with what he's been going through at the moment, it would make me so happy to see him next year playing where he belongs to be and where Brighton belong to be, which is in the Premier League.
Okay, I mean, because I would say, rewind 15 years and any sort of tricky wingers, when we had the likes of Charlie Oakway and Richard Carpenter, we had tricky wingers like Paul Brooker and Nathan Jones. On the training field, they tried to smash those wingers.
Yeah.
Is that what you try and do?
No, I don't think you can get away with it these days now. You can't.
I'm glad you
can't.
Just in case you're successful.
Exactly. And you know, you want to stay within the laws of the game. I try and play the game fairly. And I think that's important as well. Having a good ethic when you play football and being a sportsman. You can be a winner and still be a sportsman. And I don't like smashing players. And that's one of the reasons I'm sat here with you now, was because I was on the end of a bad tackle, and I wouldn't want to do that to anyone else.
Sure. So just quickly, we mentioned on on Anthony Knockhart's father. Did you get to meet him?
Oh yeah, he used to come to all the games. He was in the players' lounge all the time. I've been out for meals with him, and that's another thing, the togetherness of the group. We don't just do things together at training or at games. We're together. Our wives are together. Our kids play together, and it was a real shock what happened to Anthony's father.
So was it the case that that one or two people wanted to go and you all said, well, hang on, I want to go too, and to his funeral?
Yeah, I think, well, the thing with Anthony is he would have done the same for any of us. And the thing with Anthony is he needs us around him. He loves football. And his dad, when we were at his funeral, without going into too much detail, it was in French. But what struck me was how passionate Anthony's father was about football. Everything in the service was about football. Anthony's father had coached football, had been part of football for years, and you can see with Anthony's technical ability that had come from his dad. So they were so honoured that we had gone as a team, his family, his friends, and it was a real honour. I was humbled to be there, and it was something I'll never forget. And hopefully, in memory of Anthony and his father, we can do something special for that family this year.
Sure. Talking of this year, I mean, we all saw how proud. I mean, let's rewind to the last game of the season, the second leg of the playoff. Now, I've been going to the Amex about 100 and something games. The Doncaster game, the very first game, was obviously very memorable, and we've had some full houses, but I've never known such a noise. I'm in the West Stand upper. I'm on the halfway line, about two-thirds of the way back, so I'm fairly close to the roof line, but that was actually hurting. That was that loud. Did that come across on the pitch?
Of course, yeah. I always say this, fans don't realise what a difference they can make to a football match and to a player's confidence. And after going down 2-0 at Sheffield Wednesday, we all still believed. We all still believed after the season we had, we could turn it around. We had players. Anthony should never have played that game. His ankle was about three times the size of his ankle. Steve Sidwell had done his medial ligament in his knee and went out and played on it. And that shows the type of characters that we had at the club.
Walking wounded.
They were walking wounded. And the performance in the first half was... I've never seen
it was like a, train,
a better performance in the championship from any football club than what I saw that evening, and that was something that we all look back on and should be proud of, even though the end result wasn't what it could have been. The actual performance and the way we went about it was nothing short of first class.
I was about to say, I think, and that was very much appreciated from the stands, and you could see how much it meant to so many people on the pitch. You know, Bruno was crushed into tears, and there was yourself. You know, I think later on in the season, anyway, not at that game, sort of, you know, telling the fans to keep their chin up. So, you know, we could still do this, and it does. Come across as that connect, and I think what a lot of people were concerned about, I was fairly confident, but not everyone was that confident of the fact that, you know, were we going to be able to pick ourselves up after that sort of, you know, crushing, you know, what should have been, you know, playoff final, you know, 15 points ahead of Sheffield Wednesday. You know, you start the new season, and we've pretty much started as we carried on last year, and like we say, 7 defeats in 63 and what have you. So what I'd say to you, because we're getting close to the end of the show now, what I'd say to you is, what are the things that actually we need to do now, both on the pitch and off the pitch, to actually think, yeah, we can do this, we can get over the line?
On the pitch, we just need to keep going and stay focused and not get carried away. We're having a lot of really good, positive things said about us at the moment. And going back to the manager, one thing that I've learned from him is he never gets too carried away and he never gets too low. And I think if the supporters can stay that way, there will be games this season. We have another 30 games to go where we lost at home to Brentford and we didn't perform to the standards that we expect of ourselves.
I understand Chris was very cross of that game.
Yeah, well, he should be, because we didn't reach the standards that we expect. And there's going to be blips. There's going to be a pressing at home at times. But it's how we respond as a group. The motto of the club is together, and it's not corny and it's not artificial. For me, it really does stand for what the club is about at the moment, and that means that we are in it together, not just the players on the pitch, not just the coach and staff or the board, but the fans play a crucial part in the atmosphere of what we do, especially at home. And if they can stay behind the lads off the pitch and keep being the way they've been outstanding since I've been at the club, then we have a fantastic chance of, come May, doing something that we all set out to do for a long, long time.
Can we do it?
100%.
Liam Rossini, thank you very much indeed for coming into the Albion Roar.
No, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Sometimes in our lives, we all have pain, we all have sorrow, but if we are wise, we know that there's always tomorrow. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean. Please swallow your pride. I have